It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Boys Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 291 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Wild Wednesday here. Almost there, folks. Hump day. Couple more days till the weekend. Here we go. Have you guys been voting? Sixth annual Minor League Mayhem Tournament is in full swing. I'm recording this Tuesday night, and we are in the final eight tilts of round one, and voting has been fast and furious. I've been happy with the comments. I mean, everybody's been respectful, and, you know, actually most people just say who they voted for, but, you know, the guys that have been talking, it's been all cool. So that's the positive takeaway. Hasn't been too many clowns. I mean, now and again, there's a couple that are in the comments. I like the one guy who told me, you forgot Probert and Koser, bro. I sure did. Anyway. But other than that, I mean, for the most part, it's been good. I mean, you get your where's so-and-so whiners, but that's typical of all the tournaments. But it's been fun, and I'm glad everybody's, I hope everyone's participating. And it's been fun. I'm not going to say too much today. Actually, I have a really cool guest. I recorded the other day, this past Saturday, with Ron. I've known Ron for a long time. We're in the tape trading hobby together and, on the old message boards. So you're going to get a couple old guys, ranting about VHS and beta and everything else. This episode is a real kind of look. This is a real fight nerd episode. I'll tell you that. And we really talk about collections and videotapes and before YouTube and newsletters. And, for those that remember the old fried chicken message board and stuff, this will take you back, this conversation, and the old ads in the hockey news selling fight tapes and all that stuff. Yeah, Ron and I talk about all that stuff. We talk about the old pioneers of the tape selling and making industry, and I'm sure for maybe some of you newer listeners, it'll be going over your heads, but it really is a look at collecting and everything and how we had to do it back then, before YouTube and everything else. I mean, it's quite remarkable, actually. And just the avenues you had to go down to make a trade or to get in touch with people and to make trades and that type of thing. And like I said, I mean, you know, maybe for new age folks that didn't trade and whatever else and all that stuff, it's not, it might be a little dry, but, I think for us older folks, which is probably most of my demographic that listen to this show anyway, I think it'll take you back to the good old days. But I had lots of fun with it, and I hope you guys do too. But, and Ron and I talked for a long time, so I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to yap too long today. The only thing I'm going to tell you is there's over 50 shows in the Hockey Podcast Network. All the NHL teams have a podcast, so whatever team you're a fan of, there's a show for you. Terry Ryan's also on the network. For my off-network friends, of course, I got Jolt and Joe Lozito bouncing. Oh, he's down in Florida. Yeah, he's probably checking out the retirement homes there. Del Boca Vista, Phase 3. I heard he went barefoot in the clubhouse, though. You know, he was going to run for condo board president, I think. But, what was it, Seinfeld, when Kramer was, he's running against the guy in a wheelchair in Common Sense. So, Joe got beat out by the guy in the wheelchair, I think. But he was down there talking to the Orlando Solar Bears. I encourage you to go and listen to Joe's show, The Coliseum Chronicles. Well, he has two podcasts. That's how busy Joe is. Not only is he bouncing around Florida, he's got two shows too. Coliseum Chronicles is a New York Islanders podcast. And then he's also, his newest venture is the Nordiques Knuckles podcast, which is obviously Quebec Nordiques, centered. But Matt Karkner is in charge down there in Orlando, of course, former Islander. He was on Joe's show. He did an excellent interview on Joe's show. He had Joe come in and talk to the guys about, you know, Joe's life experience and what he's gone through. So that sounded like a really, really cool deal. That was cool that Karkner would do that. And it sounds like the players really got a lot out of it. And I know it was really exciting for Joe to get down there and to do some public speaking and some motivational speaking, or, you know, however you want to phrase it, which was cool. And I know Joe will do a great job with that. I'm going to get Joe on the show here. Coming soon. I'll have to talk to him about a schedule. We'll work something out. I'd like to get Joe back on the show just to rant and rave like us old timers do. But I'm not going to rant and rave today. I'm going to keep it short and we'll keep it moving. Let's get on and talk with Ron. So like I said, guys, hit up the Fourth Line Voice on Facebook and vote. Every day is a new set of fights, and get out and have your voice heard. Other than that, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. I'll be completely honest. My YouTube channel has been kind of dormant. I really haven't done a lot with it in the last few months. Nonetheless, it does have 2,500 videos on it. So I'm pretty sure those out there probably have not watched everything that's on there. So definitely go and check that out. Other than that, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Ron about tape trading and a whole bunch of stuff. It's a look at in the beginning of the hockey fight, how it all came to be. Well, like I just said, when you go and check out my YouTube channel, when you're bouncing around YouTube and watching all these hockey fight clips, just think for a second. I wonder where these came from. Yes, somebody actually had to sit down way back when and hit record on a VCR. And if it wasn't for those guys, there'd be nothing on YouTube. So it's interesting how it's gone. So keep that in mind next time you're on YouTube. But all right, folks, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Ron. I hope you enjoy it. I'll be back on Sunday to talk with you. All right, guys. Thanks. All right, here on the Fourth Line Voice, I have a special guest today here on episode 291. It is none other than fellow fight fan, my friend Ron. Ron, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, Darren. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, hey, I appreciate you coming on. You're an old-time fight fan, old-time fight tape collector, and we're going to be talking VHS and maybe even some 8mm, maybe even some Beta. We'll talk about it all today here, folks. We're gonna go back in time to a simpler time. And Ron's going to take the journey with us here and lead us through it. Before we get going, I know you told me, and I've completely drawn a blank because I have there's some folks from the old Fried Chicken, the old FC days that are tuning in. What was the username on Fried Chicken?
It used to be TGR32, which was I'm not the most creative person when it came to making a username. So it's kind of a tip of the cap to Stu Grimson. The TGR stands for the Grim Reaper. Stu's number when you get to Anaheim, 32. So the Grim Reaper 32. That's what I selected because I'm kind of creativity challenged. So it was TGR 32 back on the old FC site.
That's it. I don't know if you had given me 25 guesses if I would have got that's what that stood for. I'd like to think the 32 might have been a giveaway, but maybe not. But so like
well,
so,
no, the, no go for ahead. Some reason the guys for some reason the guys on FC used to, you know, the guys used to bust my chops, and they would go, oh yeah, okay, they thought it stood for Tiger for some reason, but no, it was the Grim Reaper for Stu Grimson.
Well, and saying that, before we obviously get into this whole VHS and all that, well, we'll talk about lots of stuff today, but in picking Grimson, so is he like your favorite enforcer or something? Like, what made you go with Stu?
I don't know. You know, he's one of them. I have many of them. And of course, Probert, a lot of the Boston guys. I grew up here in Massachusetts, watched a lot of the Boston guys. So, you know, going back to the Don Cherry days with O'Reilly, Winsick, Jonathan, and Secord. Jay Miller, Brian Curran, Lyndon Byers, and going through there, and then he's Stu Grimson. I was a fan of his too.
There you go. So you've obviously spent some time in the old Boston Garden.
Oh yeah, yep. Made the misfortune of one game getting obstructed seats, but those days are over as far as obstructed view. But yeah, very unique place. It was that old brawl that's on video with bench clear between Quebec and Boston, and it was an out of town announcer who made the observation that the Boston fans cheer louder for the fights than they do for the goals, and that was a pretty accurate assessment on his part.
Well, there we go. Well, I mean, like everything, we'll obviously start at the beginning here. I always, when I have players on and stuff, we timeline their career, that type of thing. But like you said, you were born in the Massachusetts area in Boston, and when did you kind of start, not so much getting into hockey, I guess, but how did you get into, the fight game? When did you start taking notice of the fighters and start kind of following that type of enforcement in the NHL?
Well, back in the 70s. Back in the 70s when I really, my dad used to watch the Bruins, and he, you know, when I was really younger, he'd have, you know, the Bobby Orr times.
Yep.
And then as time shifted, when I started to become, you know, really started to get into watching the Bruins, it was the Don Cherry days. And that team was, you know, loaded with physical players. Terry O'Reilly, Winsink, Jonathan, and Secord came up as far as the heavyweights. But the games in the old garden, the small rink surface, you know, great games, small rink surface, you know, a lot of hits, a lot of taking the body, you know, good hockey back then. So we'd watch the hockey, and then you know, the next day we'd be playing, you know, football, the street hockey, whatever it was, and we'd talk about the game the night before, and what always came up were the fights. We'd always talk about the fights. So there was always a fascination, at least the kids that I grew up with the fights and the fighters, and that carried through, you know, into high school. And, you know, so we always were interested in the fights. I always followed the players. And then, you know, you'd pick up hockey magazines like the old Goal magazine or books and stuff. And the other team I was kind of fascinated with the Flyers, because they were known to have a tough team. So I kind of enjoyed that hockey. I don't know if it was influenced by the old Bruins and the way they played, but that's the part of hockey I enjoyed was the physicality, not just the fights, but the way the game was played back then, taking the body, the hitting, and the good combination of everything that the NHL was back then.
Yeah. Now, well, to go back to, I always find this interesting too, because, and that's the thing. Well, and for those that obviously you don't know, but Ron and I talked like yesterday on the phone, we were kind of just outlining what we're going to talk about and just, you know, just general BS. But it was, we were basically talking about how this generation of fans, these younger fans, of course, they grew up with the internet and satellite and Hulu, and anything you want from any league that you want is internet TV, and you can get it and you can watch it. Of course, when Ron and I were growing up and stuff, it was very primitive, unless you had the massive satellite dish or whatever, which I didn't have. In terms of when you were growing up and you were kind of getting into the fights, you know, early or, you know, grade 7, 8, high school, that type of thing. What was kind of the TV setup where you had? Did you just have the Boston games and that was it? Or what did you get to see?
So early on, and that's a funny thing, because you know, I'm old enough to remember rabbit ears. Rabbit ears were yep. something that went on top of you. This is pre-cable. Something that went on top of your TV, and you'd have to move to get semi-good reception of a certain station. And you'd have the, you know, you'd have the three major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and then up here in Boston, we'd have Channel 56, or in the Boston area. I'm not in Boston. And Channel 38. And 38 carried the Bruins games back then. So early on, we'd get to watch the Bruins on TV 38. Then eventually in 1984, the Bruins moved to eventually we got cable. So in the late 70s, we got cable where I grew up. And, you know, so you get better reception and you got a few more stations. HBO, I still remember when HBO wasn't 24 hours. It would come on at like 5 o'clock at night. And then 1984, the Bruins moved to Nesson, and that's where their home games were. You had to buy the Nesson subscription service. Now, in between when we got cable, and actually I got to back up here, Dan. Pre-cable, you would have the ABC used to carry, I believe, the occasional Saturday game, because I remember there was a game where the Flyers played the Bruins, and Bob Kelly fought Dennis O'Brien. Remember watching that game, and occasionally you'd get to watch a ABC game, or there was a year where the Canadians were playing the Rangers, and actually TV 38 was carrying those Stanley Cup playoff games because the Bruins were out of it, but they were still showing them, which was nice. Then cable came along, and we had access to Sports Channel New England, and so we get to catch some Ranger games, Hartford Whaler games. And it was also USA Network, which was pretty cool. USA Network had had a couple games on during the week, a couple NHL games during the week. I remember watching the Chicago Minnesota game live, where they had that bench clear, and that was a pretty cool game. And then eventually, I think it was 84, 85, the NHL contract went over from USA Network over to ESPN. So yeah, that was a setup. I never had a satellite dish. But yeah, the people, you know, the younger generation with this dish, they had no idea what those old satellite setups used to look like. These, you know, these giant things that people would have in the backyards, and you drive by. First of all, you'd wish you had one, and you're like, oh, they must be rich, you know, because you could, you know, the people who had the satellite dish could pick up the telecast, you know, all across the country, so they could pick up hockey games, you know, from other, you know, other areas like MSG. You know, Madison Square Garden Network and the other things that were going on around the country.
No, absolutely. And oh yeah, you drive by, yeah, the satellite dish, they're about the size of a Winnebago out in the backyard. Oh yeah. Yeah. They'd come with a guide. It looked like a phone book. This is what was going to be on for the month. And it was like, a friend of mine had one that was like, oh my God. But we just thought that was like, I remember going over there and just like blowing your minds that you could see all this stuff. Right. And, you know, you had to have the sleepovers, right? Because that's in the dirty movies would come on at night, right? So you had to stay at that guy's house. Yeah, but the old satellite dish, good old days. But
none of my friends had one. I mean, none of us had one back then. You know, if I had had one when I started recording the fights and stuff, that would have been great. But no, I never had the satellite dish.
No, dude, like I always say, when I talk on here, I'm like, really, the only games that we got were Hockey Night in Canada. And then the French channel. So you got the Montreal stuff and Quebec every once in a while, yep. And Nordiques. But other than that, like, I mean, I guess we probably got the ABC stuff, I think. I don't really remember. But other than that, that was about it. So it was pretty primitive in what you saw. So it was like, that was the big thing, of course, when we started getting into the fight tapes, because you'd read the box scores and you'd, you know, for me, it would be like maybe, you know, whatever the, probably the early 90s, I guess, or late 80s, but you'd see like, oh, you know, McSorley versus Brown in Philadelphia or something, but it's like, well, obviously we never saw that. So to all of a sudden get a fight tape and have that on there was like, oh, this is what I read in the box score like 4 years ago, you know, whatever. But when did you start recording and getting into what got you into the fight tape thing, and when did you start recording?
All right, so I'm a generation behind the original tape pioneers. There are guys out there doing that. We can get to that afterwards. But I had read I got started in 83, 84, but pre that, I used to get a subscription to Sports Illustrated, in front, they had these little sport blurbs, and there was one short thing where they wrote about somebody was selling a hockey fight cake somewhere. And, you know, of course, they editorially, they didn't like the hockey fights. I thought it was great. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And, you know, like, you know, they didn't list where you could get it. Otherwise, I'd be like, you know, searching to get a copy of it. But I thought that was a cool idea, and we were down. I remember talking with my friends down at the CAF in high school, and we're, you know, talking about it. We're like, oh, that'd be great. Can you imagine the old, there was a game me and my brother watched live, which the Minnesota Boston game, which at the time set the record for the most penalty minutes, and we watched that one live. Like, oh, imagine if you could watch that game. Or the Bruins going into the stands at MSG. I missed that game. So that game was December 23rd. I didn't watch that game. And the whole next day, we were playing football. I believe it was Christmas Eve. And we're playing football. And everybody was talking about it. Oh, did you see it? And it was like all over the news. I totally missed it. And back then, there's no DVR like there is nowadays. And you know, they're not going to rebroadcast the game if you missed it. Like any other show back then, you missed it.
Yep.
And, you know, VCRs were, you know, weren't that commonplace back then. We certainly couldn't afford it back then. So, you know, I kind of missed that. So the summer of 83, I worked all summer. I saved up. I bought my own VCR. It was about $200. It was a Philips VCR. It was this big box of a machine. You hit eject, the thing came out of the top of the thing. And I bought that. My whole goal in buying that, not to mention, that's about the time. This was the early 80s, you know, 83. The VHS was starting to get really popular. And they were more affordable as units. Like your average household could afford one of these things, tape their shows. And there was all these movies, you know, same thing with HBO. You know, there was these movies that were out, and you could go to the local mom and pops. This is before Blockbuster came in. You could go to the local mom and pops video store and order, you know, go rent out all these movies that had been out. Slapshot. I was too young to watch Slapshot when that was out in movie theaters. My parents never would have let me see that movie. Now I could just rent it out and watch it at home. You know, it was great. Yeah. So I saved up all summer. The it cost me over $200. I got a tape, and I set up. Now, I didn't know how these guys were doing it. There's a generation of guys ahead of me who were doing it, and I didn't realize what they were doing. We talked about this last night, Darren, how, you know, similar experiences, and it's not just us. I've also talked with other collectors who had the same thing where initially we didn't know what we were doing, and we'd hook the VCR up, we'd be watching a game. Sometimes I'd go back and forth between the Bruins or Sports Channel and, you know, with the Whales or ESPN, USA Network, and try to catch the fight. And you'd sit there, watch the game, waiting for an inkling of a fight. And then you'd hit the record and play button, trying to record it. And, you know, the heads of the VCR would start to go. And you're like, come on, come on, come on, because you don't want to miss the fight. And a lot of my first couple hockey fight tapes that I made myself, they were botch jobs. I still have them, you know, still nostalgic. But a lot of the fights come in progress. Which is when, you know, when it starts up. The fight, you know, in progress is when the fight's already going, and that's when the video picks up. You don't pick up what started the fight. You don't pick up in the beginning of the fight. And or there's a lot of, like, rough-ins where I thought there was going to be a fight, and it turns out that the players just, you know, we're just roughing a little jam or a little scrum. So I started in 83, 84. I made my own tape. Same thing in 84, 85. I did the same thing. I started in 85, 86, same thing with making the old tape, and then I went into the Army. When I was in the Army, there was a guy I was stationed with who was from Binghamton, New York, a Binghamton Ranger fan, big Kevin Dineen fan, and he got a subscription to the Hockey News, so I'd borrow the Hockey News and go through it. So as I'm going through the Hockey News, and back they had these advertisements back there, and it was, you know, all the older guys who were selling them. And, you know, it was like, you know, 60 hours of hockey fight footage. And, you know, that, you know, where you could write these guys. I don't recall if they had their phone numbers in there or not, but you could at least write these guys. And I was like, how is that possible? Oh my, you know, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world that was there. So I started writing the guys, and some of the guys, I won't mention their last names because I want to respect their privacy, but there was Dan out of California, Mark L out of New York, Robert out of Canada, out of the Montreal area, up in Canada. Mark B. out of Pittsburgh. I forget his name, but there was a gentleman out of Baltimore. I got some stuff from him. There are other guys in there that I did get stuff for, but were in there. And I'm sure there's more. Eventually, Andy B. out of the Minnesota area. He was in there. So he had a bunch of guys selling tapes. So I wrote to him. And then they would, where I was stationed at, they would send me the list. Oh, I forgot one more who was a big one back then. Phil D, which was a fake name. His real name was Steve. But Phil D out of New York, he was another big one that was back in the hockey news at the time. So these guys would send you a list. And then, I'd be paging through the list. And a lot of these old Bruin fights, like the Minnesota game with the multiple fights, that was on there. The Bruins going into the stands at MSG, that was on there. I was like, wow, great. I was blown away. So I just started ordering them. And then there was a bunch of fights that were, I'd never heard of or seen. But I was, and you kind of knew the fighters that were listed on there. Nick Fatio, Clark Gillies, Willie Plett. And you see these matchups like, oh, wow, this guy fought this guy. Oh, great. So I just started ordering from these guys. And, in a couple cases, over the years, I'd start up relationships with them. But, talk to them over the phone and get to learn about, some of the backstories behind the tapes and stuff. But back then, and here's the funny thing, and a lot of the old collectors can relate to this, much different nowadays. Nowadays, everybody has this footage right in their hand on their cell phone. Anybody can go down the YouTube wormhole on any given time and just start watching hockey fights. And there's a guy I work with, and he tells me, oh, yeah, it was on YouTube. And you watch one, and then they put up the list to the right of all these other fights. The next thing you know, a half hour later, you've gone through watching several dozen hockey fights on there. And it's instantaneous. And some of these guys are putting the fights out, like, that night. In fact, right now, some of these outlets, like, right after a fight happens, it'll go up on Twitter or something like that with a matter of minutes after the fight takes place. Yeah. Back in the old days, we would have to wait. So first you'd have to wait the guy making the tape, making the master tape, for him to complete the master tape. The fight that happened could be delayed several months before you actually got to see it. Then you order away for it, and it would usually take about 2 to 3 weeks after you sent your order in for it to actually get to your house. Yep. And then you could be able to watch it. And a lot of these early tape pioneers, what they were doing is they would record the game on one tape, or actually several tapes. These guys who are really into it, the early tape pioneers, they would tape them. In fact, some guys would tape, because with VCR, there's differences in quality of the speed that you tape at. And some guys would tape by the period at high quality and then put their masters on a high quality master tape. So, they're getting the best quality that they can for the tape. So eventually when I was in the Army, my dad would send me, he sent me the Bruins games. And then I by that time I had two VCRs. And I started doing that myself. But, a lot of these guys, and this is why I feel a ton of gratitude for the early tape pioneers, because the NHL was never going to preserve this stuff or release it or anything like that. If these guys weren't out there recording this footage and saving it for the, and eventually the rest of us got to enjoy it, a lot of this stuff would not be on YouTube. A lot of the early 70s and 80s stuff would not be out there available on YouTube if it weren't for the early tape pioneers who were, a lot of these guys, like Nick was in a news article, and he had several VCRs around the house, a satellite dish. A lot of these guys put a lot of time and money into keeping up with it. And I couldn't do it. I was busy with life. I put myself through college. So I'm trying to get my degree. At the same time, I'm working like 60 hours a week, to try to, maintain everything. And I just didn't have time to do season sets. So I stopped doing it. I just kept ordering from the guys. So these guys put a lot of time and effort into preserving this stuff. And it never would have happened without them, because you weren't going to get it from the NHL.
No, absolutely. And that was the other thing. The shit wasn't cheap either. Like, I remember, especially, and then, of course, you know, being up here in Canada, I mean, there was the exchange rate and everything else. I mean, yeah, so it was tough. But, I mean, like, this is, you know, I think they were, it was about $20 a tape, if I remember. And then it was 20 a tape or, like, 3 for $50 or something like that. I remember that. And it was, like, with this one guy. And, but, yeah, you'd get the list. And like you said, you were looking at these fights and it was like, oh, yeah, it was the names from the box score from the year before, right? And, you know, you wanted to – because a lot of these guys, we never – like, that was the thing. It sounds so funny, but it's like when you talk about, like, Probert back in – even in 85 or whatever, or Dave Brown, I mean, you know, we never saw these guys. It's not like they – if they weren't on Hockey Night in Canada, I mean, we didn't see Probert fight. Like, so this was all like new, like it was new stuff. When we got it, it was like Christmas, man. When you go to the mailbox and you had that tape coming.
Absolutely. Yep.
Oh yeah. You'd throw that tape in, you'd wear the reels out, right? Watching that stuff. And it was like, yeah. And like you said, it's, and I brought this up in the episode, actually, I just recorded before we got going, but, I mentioned that like people, complete, and I found myself as well, but I mean, the other generation, the younger kids, they don't understand, like, yeah, like you said, everything's in the palm of their hand, they just go to YouTube, and oh, Bob Probert, and oh, well, they're all of his fights, oh, well, yeah, okay, well, yeah, and that's great, I'm not saying they shouldn't be like that, that's great that it is like that, but they don't realize the sacrifice that went into to get some of that stuff, and even before him, like you said, with the 70s, and yeah, like all these Ben Wilson fights, these O'Reilly things. It's like, yeah, I think people don't understand sometimes the amount of effort and money put forth into getting that footage. And
what it is, Darren, it's passion. These guys had passion to do it. And you know, we were talking about this and the hobby of collecting hockey fights. It's driven by media. So they're in, you know, VHS, which came out in, you know, Sandy was one of the first guys who started recording the stuff. And, you know, he's gracious enough to talk to me a couple times. And if anybody wants to get, you know, listen to a good thing with Sandy and get the information directly from him, I highly recommend, the Chris Jericho, episode that he was on. He's actually, Anthony Bowen's dad. Anthony's a wrestler at ECW, and of course Jericho, his dad was Ted Irvin, and I'm assuming Anthony must have said something to Chris, and you know, oh yeah, my dad you know, was collects hockey fights, and so Chris had him on, and Sandy has a lot of great stories as far as how he started out, but it's the passion that these guys have in doing this, and you know, the pre-VHS era. So I talked to Sandy. I used to talk with Paul L. out of New York. And Paul used to go by Johnny Pie on hockeyfights.com. And I talked to both these guys. And, you know, Sandy, you know, he goes in the Jericho podcast, how he was fascinated with it. And he started going to the library and going over this is pre-video. And you know, he just had a passion for it. He started going to the library and started going over the box scores. As far as who was fought, and he started creating logs as far going over the box scores and the, you know, the roughing and fighting majors. And this is back in 72 and 73, and he's starting to do it. And Paul told me in the late 60s, he got interested in it, and him and a buddy used to get the photos of hockey fights out of newspapers. And they used to go to New York, because he was from the New York area, and they used to go to this newsstand that had all these papers from out of town, and he told me the Canadians won. The Canadian newspapers were the best because they used to have more, you know, more pictures of fights in there, and they were like creating their own scrapbooks. This is pre-video, and they're creating scrapbooks of the fights. And then he was he used to listen to the radio. You know, he's a Bruins fan, but he lived in New York. And you know, a lot of these, I don't know if the youngsters, if they listen to your show, understands terrestrial radio. You know, but in the old days, you know, AM terrestrial radio, if you try to listen at, in the daytime, there's a lot of static. But if you listen at night, it kind of calms down, and you can actually pick up radio broadcasts from other cities. But it's tough that you kind of got to listen through the static and stuff. So Paul would listen to the Bruins telecast. which I think used to go out of WBZ back in the day. And, you know, he'd try to listen, and he said he'd get pissed off when there was a fight, but he couldn't hear it because, you know, the static would come in. So, and that's another thing when you, the static would be, you know, sometimes it'd come through and then it would dissipate. So, you know, these two guys had this passion to start the stuff. And then when the VHS came in and Sandy, you know, Sandy bought his first VHS, and he said that he, at his side of town where he lived, he didn't have cable. So he rented out an apartment on the other side of town that did have cable to be able to record the fights of, I mean, the games, and then take the fights off them. So that's pretty much, I mean, that's some dedication right there.
Yeah.
And then he said that he got through a contact at Madison Square Garden that they had heard about somebody else who was also recording fights. So he got in contact with them, and that must have been, I'm assuming, maybe the first hockey fight tape trade ever between those two. But, you know, so Sandy put out an ad in the hockey fight news for different areas, and, you know, like Toronto. And he was looking for games, and he'd do a deal where if they taped them a certain amount of games, like four or five, he'd trade them for the game if it had a fight in it for a hockey fight tape. So people were sending him games. And, you know, it's this grassroots network. And then other guys started to pop up. You know, you had Dan in California. A lot of the guys I told you about, you know, that were in the hockey news. You know, years later, I came into contact with a guy, Larry D. Larry D was from the New York area. He moved down to Florida. I ended up getting part of his collection. There was Francois. Francois got started. Francois B., he's also out of the Montreal area. He got started in the late 80s. He started making his own Montreal stuff. I ended up getting his masters. You know, so this grassroots thing of all these guys in different areas started to spring up, and there were more and more people, you know, creating their own stuff. And then other guys were getting sources like from the minor leagues, you know, and that was a whole nother thing. Some, as things wouldn't go on, you know, I'm going to say maybe around 84, 85, 86, then you start seeing the minor league tapes really start to pop up and come into prevalence. And, you know, those started to spring up and become more numerous out there.
Yeah. Well, that was a whole other animal, the minors and juniors, because of course they didn't really have TV contracts, right? I mean, maybe locally they'd play a game or two now and again, but for the most part, you need to have a hookup with either a player or a coach, or and then you'd get the game tapes from them, because every game had to be recorded in case something happened. They had to give it to the league. So at the end of the year, if you knew a coach, he'd give you the 72 game tapes or whatever, because if you're on the road, the other visiting team had to make two copies, and they would give you the other team a copy. So at the end of the year, if you knew the coach, he'd give you the game tapes, and the guy would off, he'd go, and like you said, the two VCRs, and he'd put together the fight tape from there. But guys guarded that stuff because you didn't want to burn the source, obviously, right? I don't think that was actually more of an I think that was more of an issue later on, going further into the modern era, when you had like YouTube and eBay and that type of stuff. I know from dealing with junior teams and a few minor league teams, eBay was a big fear of theirs, that their stuff was going to end up being sold on eBay. Because for a while, when eBay first started, that was a big deal. You saw a ton of fight tapes and stuff and DVDs at that point being sold on eBay.
Well, so yeah, a couple things happened. So, and you're right. You never burn a source. You never bite the hand that feeds you. And if somebody sends something to me and they say, you know, don't release it, I honor my word. I just want to see the footage. And it's not to hoard it. It's you know what? You never burn a source. If the guy's putting himself out for you, and you know he's letting you watch, you know, have this footage, but he's trusting you too. He doesn't want you to release the footage, so you don't burn that guy. And you know, some guys have been burned. Just a quick backside. So there's also information. I mean, not information. There's also things, footage that came about, and it comes about from sources before, you know, guys like Sandy started recording. So there's a whole, you know, that whole Bruins. There's a whole bunch of Bruins footage that came out from the late '60s and the early '70s And that I believe was from a source from an archive, from like a Bruins archive that was able to go. That's what I heard from one of the other old time collectors that was able to go in. You know, someone told him where to find, you know, what games to go look for. And he was able to, you know, that was a great, great collection of fights. That tape's out there right now. But that, you know, a lot, there's been stuff that happened before the VCR era. And it's from guys getting sources, and they were able to find it before it got destroyed. And that stuff circulated. So that's out there. As far as the you know, the selling tapes, so it was around the early 90s, the Hockey News had banned the ads in their publication, as far as, you know, they were anti-fighting, and they finally banned the ads in there. And I do know a couple guys who got cease and desist letters. A couple guys who were selling got cease and desist letters. And then there was when the internet popped up, I think it was called the Web of Traders or something like that, where a bunch of guys were on there selling, and they did a sting of those guys. And again, cease and desist. And then on the hockey fight boards, or you remember originally on FC, it wasn't just the Tape Trade Center. Guys could actually market a fight tape and sell it on there. And I think a couple of guys got caught up in a sting operation. I think it was out of, if I remember correctly, what everybody was posting, it was like out of Jersey, and they probably hired a PR firm and, you know, bought some tapes and then said, hey, you sold this, you know, tape and, you know, cease and desist. How much money do you make? Cease and desist. And, you know, that's when I know FC said, all right, no more selling on the site. And, you know, you can only trade, you know, can only trade footage, collected to collect, and no more selling or profiting. And then there's one guy, I won't mention his site, but, there is a site that was up there. You'll probably remember, Darren, where the guy was charging for a subscription service. To sign up to his site and view his fights, and he got in a big jam.
Yeah,
I think he made a lot of money off that. But if I remember, because that one did hit the news, there was like some newspaper report on. I don't think he was paying taxes on that money. So
I think he got hit with a hard fine. I think he ended up having to pay money. I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he got in a jam for selling. So I don't sell footage. I don't want to get any jam, any copyright jams. I've never sold footage. I stay away from that. And then there was another guy that I want to respect everybody's privacy. There was another guy who we probably both know, who was going around. He was going to sports memorabilia shows. He'd set up his table with his VCR and TV, and he was selling things. And I heard he got himself in a jam selling tapes.
Yeah, I think early on though, like those early guys and stuff. They would have made some good coins selling that stuff. They had a good run for a decade plus selling stuff, and they would have made some good money, I'll tell you.
Some treat it. So here's the thing: some treat it like a business, and you know they make money. Some guys could, but some, you know, one old collector told me, he goes, he said, I don't make it. He goes, I make enough money to cover my expenses, you know, because VCR is the heads wear out, you know.
Yeah.
The tapes, you can't just keep on taping over the same tapes, because the quality will go down. So you got to cycle out the tapes. You got to buy the better quality tapes, otherwise the picture is going to look like shit. So, you know, plus you got the set, you know, to buy a set, you know, if they're one of the guys who had a satellite dish, you know, you have to pay for the satellite dish or the cable. So to be really dedicated, where you're taping multiple games, you know, you need a, you know, you got to put in a lot of money to do it if you really wanted to. So, as I said, one collector told me, "No, I'm not making a profit. I do sell tapes, but I'm that's for the equipment I burn through."
Yeah, that's true, because the VHS tapes alone they weren't cheap. That's for sure.
Well, it's funny, Darren, because just to backtrack, one of the guys, and we used to joke around on the hockey fight boards. One of the guys out of New York, back when he was selling, he had a funny thing on his front thing that, you know, he had his price thing, and I think tapes are $40 each, but there's a two tape minimum. So you know, don't waste his time with just buying one. You have to buy at least two to make it worth his while.
Yeah,
and he was high priced back then.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, 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 yeah. It Well, fast forward, and like you said, the internet gets on us here, and what's this internet thing? And I quickly discovered fried chicken in its very early stages. I think that's when it was just all. I think it was just one long text. I think at that point,
It was one page. The early bits. So they weren't the first. There was the first one. I don't think had a long life. Wasn't it Dr. Souls or Mr. Souls fight board? I just remember guys, Sal, I think that was Sal's board, and guys would refer back to that one. When I discovered that there was a hockey fight community and on the internet, FC was the first one I discovered. You're right. Initially it was one scrolling page. So you'd have to scroll down and anybody could post anything. And someone might reply like several things later, and then they eventually got a new site, new server, and then they clean it up to put it in different sections. That's when you found out that there were a lot of people out there. Cause we were talking about this last night. If you look at the subculture as far as hockey, so you have hockey fans, and then back when we grew up watching hockey, every time I've seen a poll on should they remove fighting from hockey, like I remember back in the 90s where the Hockey News did a three-week debate where should they ban fighting in hockey, and of course they dedicated most of the space towards banning it, and then they had a poll. I forget if it was a telephone poll or you mailed in your results, but 85% of the people came back, no, don't ban fighting in hockey. So generally, back then, 75 to 85% of hockey fans thought fighting should remain part of the game. Now, there's, as we found out with the fight board community, and I think a lot of the fight board community, the people who were gravitated towards that, were also tape collectors. They might not have been tape makers or tape pioneers, but I think that community was into the fights, and I think a large part because they got to order the tapes. Or the tapes were at the time the tapes were going around, and that kind of piqued their interest as far as that subject's concerned. And so there's this subculture of the old hockey fight community with people who are fascinated by it. And it's kind of a form of fantasy sports, because within this old subculture, and we used to see this on the boards. You know, people used to argue about mythical heavyweight champions, Probert, Dave Brown. Who's on the top 10 all-time list? We had a system of, there was a system created, and it wasn't too far off from boxing, a system created on how to judge fights. Fight cards was another thing. Who fought who? This guy did good against, if two guys didn't fight, well, all right, who's got a better fight card? This guy beat the same guy that beat the other guy. So we said, these arguments used to take place all the time, and within the subculture. And then I argue that there's even a smaller subculture of hockey collectors like me, like you, guys who are really into collecting it, collecting the footage, and preserving it in within their collections. But that's a small minority of hockey fans, a very small minority of hockey fans, and a very small minority of the hockey fight community, the people who are. Who kind of follow it, whether they're really into it or casually.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like when we got into fried chicken, like I said, it was the one long thing, and then they eventually cleaned it up and got a whole site and whatever. NHL, this section, a minor league section, but they had a tape trading section, and that's when I really got into it. I wasn't so much a big poster or anything, or really got into a lot of the debates, but the tape trade section is where I really got rolling and made a lot of connections with people. And it would be funny because you'd get this is, like I said, this is definitely an old timer friggin' show today, because these young kids are just shaking their heads right now. But but I remember you'd get a hold of a guy.
What are you guys talking about?
Oh, exactly. But it was like, oh, here, I'll send you. Do you have a list? What's your tape list? And the guy would send you to some GeoCities or GeoWare site or, that he had created really quickly to put all his lit tapes on. And oh, it was. Yeah. And you just, like, I remember just trading with guys and building up the collection, building it up. And I mean, and again, postage wasn't cheap back then. I mean, because you're sending VHS tapes and everything else. Because again, this is the late 90s, so it's still VHS. Haven't gotten to DVD yet. And it was just like, yeah, so you were sending tapes and like I mentioned before, yeah, like when you had a trade coming, like that was Christmas when, you know, you get home and all of a sudden my mom would, oh yeah, there's something here for you from somebody in, like, you know, Illinois. And it's like, oh, you know, you're grabbing the tape and you run downstairs to play it. And, you know, and it was just, that was the big thing for me with the fried chicken, was just getting into the, because I had bought a couple tapes, but, and there was a mom and pop video store that actually had a few here, but overall, I didn't have the collection like some of these guys did. Like, you'd get a guy's list and he'd have 40 tapes on there. You'd think this guy was like, oh, this guy's the king. Like, he has the most stuff I've ever seen, you know. And it's funny now when you look at it, but at the time it was like, oh my God. But, ask you before when we were talking about the hockey news and stuff like that, because this had to be obviously pre-internet. I'm always fascinated because I never got them. And the only reason I knew about them is because you had posted them on, was it you or somebody did, had put one or two of them up on a Word file or whatever, but the newsletters, the Aggressive Hockey Report. And mixing it up. Beavers mixing it up.
Yeah, mix
it. Or yeah, whatever.
So in between, the hobby kind of has been driven by the media and then the means of communication. So a lot of the early days, it's grassroots. It's guys calling each other. You know, the youngsters have no clue what a long distance phone call, and I forget what time it was. You had to wait till after 7 o'clock at night, so these long distance fees didn't really kick in. Or if you're on the phone with somebody, for over an hour, well, you know, like I'd call and talk to Dan, and you know, I enjoy talking to Dan, but you know, an hour later, and then you get that phone bill. It's like, holy shit, I didn't know it was going to be that much. But you know, now that's nothing with the, you know, you just have your cell phone.
Well, if there was still long distance charges, you and I'd be working overtime this morning to pay for that phone call last night. Yeah. No, it was brutal back then. Yep.
Oh yeah. So, you know, there was the grassroots of guys talking to each other. Then there was the newsletters and Mark T and Sandy put that out, and I didn't get it at the time. I wish I did. I ended up getting those copies from Larry D. Larry D had a whole collection of them, and he sent them to me. And then I asked Mark if he mind if I put it up on my Facebook page, and he said he was cool with it, so I threw it up there. And yeah, you had Mike B his mixing it up, and you know, that was like the makeshift mode of communication until the internet came along. Now, when the internet came along, that's when you found out, oh, wow, there's a bunch more people who are into this, like we are, you know?
I couldn't believe it. But I was going to say with the newsletters, were they out at the same time? Or did the Aggressive come out first and then mixing it up later? Or did they overlap? How did that work? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if they overlapped or not. Yeah, I'd probably have to ask Mike B when his was out. I didn't get him at the time, and it wasn't until years later that I had access to him. I at the time I wasn't in contact with Mike. I came into contact with him later on, and I wish I was in contact with Mark with the Aggressive Hockey Fight Report, but I just didn't make that connection. No, don't forget, it's not the internet. If you don't find where there might be advertising it, you're going to miss it.
Because I can remember seeing the ads, but I never bothered to get a subscription. But I really wish I had. I'd love to actually. Yeah. I hope those guys are listening to this. Well, you're on, so I bet you they might listen to this episode. If they listen to this episode, fellas, I want to get a hold of you guys, and I want to talk about that time period when they were writing that newsletter, because I would love to hear what their, you know, what their subscription, what, how many people were into it, where were they sending it, if they caught any shit from NHL teams over, just stuff like that. I'd love to get the ins and outs of that newsletter time, because that was, because when was the date on that? That was like mid 90s, early 90s?
It was around, I think it's been around 92, 93 or 91, 92, around that time, if memory serves me correct. I got a middle-aged memory now, so it's, and I just posted those up not too long ago, but yeah, early 90s.
Yeah. I would love to sit down and talk with those guys and have them come on the show and talk. I'm just fascinated with that stuff. I'm kicking my, when you put it up and I was scrolling through them, I'm like, I would have killed to have these back in the day. Oh,
well, absolutely. And, they would have been great. Occasionally there would be a book out Dave Slamenko's looking out for number one. And eventually Fischler came out with the Bad Boys book.
Yeah.
But I'd be curious, did they ever get any shit for their opinions on it? Cause we know with the fight board days, if someone doesn't agree with your interpretation of fight, how combative. There were some people in the hockey fight community who are wound a little bit too tight. That's a whole nother thing too. There are guys and it was crazy. I mean, there was one guy who, if you crossed it, first of all, he had his own list of enemies, he referred to people as his enemies. And then he would, he had a standing offer. If you crossed him, that he would fly you out to the West Coast to fight you, and he would pay for the airfare. I don't know if this guy had a dojo or not, but that was a standing offer that we used to laugh about. But some of these guys are combative, and just imagine if they get any feedback as far as their opinions back then, you know?
Oh yeah, like that was the thing. I read a couple of them, because I mean, some of them they get a little stiff, right? So it's like, yeah, I'm sure they probably heard about it from a few people, but yeah, like because that, like I said, that mid early to midnight, like that was when I was in high school, and like my friends and I were all kind of into it. But again, no internet, you didn't know, right? So other than reading box scores, you didn't really know. And every once in a while, the news would show a clip of a fight here and there, but you didn't know. So to have, and then until the Fischler books came out, and then the Tough Guy magazines came out. The other, and which I think I've read 10,000 times. Actually, I'm looking over at my bookshelf right now. They're sitting right there. And it's like, I've read those things 10,000 times. Like those things were like, you know, like the Bible, reading that stuff. But yeah, to go, to have that ahead of time and to have those newsletters would have been awesome. But yeah, I need to, fellas, if you're listening, I need to get you on here. I want to hear some stories. But anyway, moving forward to Ron Fried Chicken, we're making some trades and everything else. At this point, what was your deal? Were you, because I was always a junior kind of minor league guy, and my wheelhouse was the 90s, because that's when I was really into it. As far as when you started out collecting, what was your focus as far as collecting? What were you trying to get, or were you just trying to get everything?
I was just trying to get everything. I started out with the early days NHL stuff, and then I'm having a mind blank with the guy out of Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. But I got like a couple Seattle Thunderbirds things, and the announcers back then. I don't know who the announcers were, but the old Seattle Thunderbirds tapes, the 86, 87, you know what I'm talking about there, and the West Coast. The Western Hockey League. Those guys were phenomenal in their announcing of the calls. And there was the one where, Darcy Simon, and I forget, was it Gregor? Or there was some guy, and they had a war, absolute war, and the announcers were just going crazy. It was great. So, yeah, I anything I could get a hold of, like IHL when the San Diego stuff came out, I just tried to get a hold of everything. When I first I didn't join up on FC for a long time. I was a lurker, so I would check in and read a lot of the stuff. But because it was kind of like a highly combative atmosphere. I used to think it was funny, but I'm going to be honest with you. At first, I thought it was beneath me. Like, yeah, I'm like an adult. Am I going to get in a pissing match with somebody over a hockey fight stuff? So I kind of stayed out of it at first. For a few years, so I didn't even join the site. It was because you could contact somebody. People used to put their email addresses up in the Tape Trade Center. You know, if they had a tape, they used to put their email addresses up. So I just contact them through email, and eventually when they had that crackdown and when you couldn't sell a tape, it was only tape trade. That's when I eventually joined up, and I still lurked. I just joined up to. I would just DM people and say, hey, do you want to trade? Or, you know, I'd like to get a copy of that tape. And I would, I'd go through the back channels. And then, after a few years, then I started to participate in it. And then, the guys wound too tight. I started, nowadays they call them trolls, but I just used to find it funny that the guys who would take it so seriously. So my mischievous sense of humor got the best of me sometimes, and I would just start, I would indulge in a little satire, a little mockery, and chuckle at the responses. But that's for another day.
And now here's a word from our sponsor.
The biggest tournament in college basketball is underway, and the action is just getting started on DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps. Right now, new customers can bet just $5 on any pregame moneyline bet and score $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. Plus, combine multiple bets for a shot at even bigger payouts. DraftKings will feature parlays and odd boosts all tournament long, so be sure to check out the DraftKings Sportsbook app every day and see what we have in store. Yeah, guys, upsets galore. What a tournament it's been so far. Some great final, Sweet 16 matchups. Gonzaga, UCLA, or Alabama and Houston going to keep rolling? We'll see. Can Florida Atlantic keep the Cinderella story going a little longer? I love this time of year. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code THPN. Right now, new customers can bet $5 on any pregame moneyline bet and get $150 in bonus bets if your team wins. Only at the DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
All right, we're back at it here. A little break. The break in the action, and we're back here, folks. Like we said, we got into the fried chicken thing and the message boards, and we're kind of in the late 90s, getting into the early 2000s. YouTube is still not around yet. People are still trading VHS tapes. When did you start getting into like trading, like the hardcore trading? When did that happen?
So that happened while on FC. So, it was people were trading, and when I told them what I had, it was like, all right, cool. I can, it's okay to trade, because I didn't know if, the decorum at first, if you got something from somebody else, can you trade it? But generally it's if you work a deal with somebody and it's just mutual respect and someone tells you, hey, please don't trade it. Please hold on to it. Like, when you look at the what we talked about earlier with the guys who are making their own stuff. So guy puts in the effort, the expense to record stuff. And a lot of the collectors, what we want is we want footage the people into the hobby for the right reasons. There's some people who were in the hobby, for them it was like a business and sports and it's kind of a sports memorabilia thing. But the collectors who were in there, just to trade for footage, get footage. We wanted to see footage that we didn't have. So a lot of people who made their own stuff, they'd want to make deals and take their work and go and work out deals with other guys who were other collectors who are making their own stuff to bring more footage in and make their collections more complete. When you talk about the code in the NHL, there was kind of a code back during trading, not to rip anybody off, honor your word, be honest with what you have. Guys used to have rating systems. Guys would put rating systems. They'd have a list of their tapes, and they'd put, some guys would use numbers, a scale like 1 to 10, a scale 1 to 5. Some guys would put, excellent was really good, very good, good, fair. Fair was kind of crappy. If you're going to work on a trade with somebody, if you're putting up some good material, you want good material in return. You don't want to make a trade with somebody and they send, and that's another thing people have to understand too with the VHS era. VHS era in trading, the generation of tape made a lot of difference. So if a guy made a master and he was sending out first generation quality from the master, second generation quality from the master, you're talking about pretty good, pretty good quality. Now, once it got traded around and it gets up to seventh or eighth generation from the master, then it's kind of a diluted project, product. And guys used to joke around about crappy tapes. It's like trying to watch a hockey fight tape through a fishbowl. Some of the tapes that are really bad out there, that's kind of what it's like. That, you know, it's the quality so horrible, it's not even worth watching in some cases. So, working out a fair deal with people, honoring their wishes. If someone was, if someone's willing to send rare stuff to you, honor their word. And some guys would ask you not to trade for like 6 months because they wanted to set up their own deals and bring in some footage. And some guys didn't mind if you traded their stuff, because if you were trading their stuff and you brought something in that they didn't have, they would want you to say, they'd want you to return the favor to them. They'd be like, hey, I got this tape, you interested? And that way, that was another way where they could bring some footage back to the collection. So, it kind of was this web network of traders that were going on back then. And, we might not always be connected. Like, there might be guys that I might not be trading with directly, but I might be friends with a friend of a friend, so I could get, what their product, what they made, and get it to my collection. And, I picked up some good quality stuff over the years, and I could trade them back something of value,
Yeah, it was always funny. Yeah, the quality debate. It was like, I was always really nervous, because that was the thing on the tape trade section. If you were trading around, like everybody was trading, if you got a rep of like having shitty stuff or whatever, like you didn't want that. It's like eBay. You didn't want a shitty rating, right? So it's like, I would always like purposely downgrade my stuff when I would tell a guy. Like, he'd be like, yeah, I'll take that. And I'm like, it's not really, it's okay. It's not great though, but it's okay.
Yeah.
And it would, and then they'd get it. They're like, oh, dude, what are you talking about? This is actually really good. I'm like, okay. But I'd always like really downgrade my stuff. That way I can say, well, I told you if he complained. But other than that, I always like to think I had a pretty good rep when I would trade. But yeah, like you said, if a guy created a tape, everybody let him kind of do the circuit and get everything he needed for the tape from each guy. And then he'd be like, okay, now you can trade it, like you said. So, yeah, everybody always respected that. Well, I take that back. Not everybody did. Most people did.
And you're right. And there were some guys who were out there who, would lie, cheat, and steal to get their hands on something. And, if you got a bad reputation, you close doors. And I know this for a fact, because I would talk to some guys, and they'd be like, don't trade with this guy. He ripped me off. And, It was different on the boards, where FC held people accountable. Fried Chicken, if you rip somebody off, or if you didn't come through with a deal, the guys got on your case on FC. If you posted the tape trade section, hey, I'm waiting. Hey, this guy, I've given him every chance. I've been waiting 2 months on this guy. He's not giving me anything. They would ban him. They'd say, hey, until you come through with the deal, you're not welcome here. The other website, the hockeyfight.com website, I got ripped off by three different guys on that website. And, we talked a little, I won't mention names, but we talked a little bit about this last night, Darren, and I kind of got miffed at the old proprietor of that website, because he didn't hold his own people accountable on that. And, some kid ripped me off. Some kid ripped me off, and we probably know the same guy, Al out of the Michigan area. He posted over there letting people over there know. And, the proprietor of the site didn't care. He's like, no, don't bring that stuff over here. So I didn't particularly care for him as far as that was concerned. But, there were guys who would, I won't trade with anybody. And they would break their word. Or one of the maneuvers that guys would do is fabricate a tiff or a grievance against the other guy. Like, you did that. There was one thing where there was somebody who fabricated a thing over the mode of how they copied it. They didn't copy through a DVD duplicate. This is back during the DVD era. They didn't, if you duplicate through a DVD duplicator, you're getting a one-for-one copy, an ISO file. It's basically a carbon copy of the other DVD. If you do a player-to-player, it's a little less, but it's about a 98% copy, and which really the most people can't tell the difference. But this guy put this grievance up there and then released some rare footage that he promised he would. So he kind of broke his word over that. And that was a BS move.
Yeah. Like I will say, with everything with the trading and stuff, it was pretty good. I mean, I know the first couple of years when I was into it, it was really easy trading with people and stuff like that. And it helped that, it really helped you if you went out and kind of, you know, shook the bushes and kind of ended up making some of your own stuff. If you could come up with something original, see, I was lucky I had the Blade stuff here with Junior and I had a connection and I could make some Blades footage. So so that gave me original, like you said, it's like footage was currency. And I had original footage, right? So I could go out and then I could get like Lazito's, he already knows, but like his Las Vegas Thunder stuff or whoever, like the original copies of the original guys, you could get in with them. So it was like, that was always a really good hookup if you could make your original stuff. But to the point though, as I'm trying to make here is to the people listening, it's like, it was hard to get, unless you knew some players, you could kind of, they could put a word in for you or whatever to come up with, like the NHL is one thing, you're taping stuff, you're taping, you have a satellite, you're taping the games, okay, whatever. But to get the minor league stuff and junior stuff, like you needed someone on the inside. And so you had to cultivate those relationships and it wasn't easy. And I was going to say what actually made it real hard was when eBay came around. Because I think eBay was before YouTube, I think.
Yeah.
And teams.
Yeah, so there,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, so, there's, I want to respect his privacy. A fellow collector of ours out of Pennsylvania, and he developed a relationship with the minor league hockey team out of that same state. And he used to get footage from the team, and then somehow they learned the tape was being sold. Now, it wasn't being sold by him. Somebody, another collector, I believe it was the collector who we referred to earlier, he used to go to the card shows and set up the VCR and sell them. He was selling the thing, and somehow the team got word of it, and this guy lost his source. He because that tape ended up getting circulated and sold, then he got cut off from the source, which kind of sucked for him, you know?
Yeah, well, and that was the thing, and then, of course, ultimately, it just sucked for everybody, because now no one gets it, you know? And I know that happened not just in Philly, but in a few places, and it's like, you know, and then when eBay came around, like you said, and then all of a sudden it starts popping up on eBay. Now these teams are really closing ranks and you can't get nothing. And it's like, cause they're all so worried that you're going to sell it on eBay, right? And it's like, tell them until you're blue in the face that you would never do it, but they still wouldn't, go for it. So yeah, I think when eBay came around and, you know, it's like anything, right? It takes one to spoil it all the time. I think, and unfortunately, those guys really cut off a lot of footage. And it's that, well, now no one will ever get to see because, I mean, that shit's long gone now. I mean, you know, I'm sure the teams probably don't even have those tapes anymore.
Yeah. No, and it's a little, you know, as I said, the guys who, you know, because eBay's right out there, and anybody from the team can go look out there, do a search, and it's on there as opposed to somebody who's just, working out a deal with somebody like, hey, I don't have anything to trade. All right, well, send me this, and I'll send you a copy, you know. It's a little different from that. He's not, like, openly advertising it and out there selling it. But I never wanted to get in a jam with any league or anybody as far as selling footage, so I was always willing to work with somebody. If somebody had footage that I didn't have, or they were willing to tape something, like if they got a game out of the a network or a game out of their area. I remember one time here on the local cable thing, they started broadcasting AHL games. So I started recording those, and one person was interested. I might just send them the game tapes, So it wasn't too hard back then to try to find stuff, you know. And some people were good, too. Like some people would work with you, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you're putting in the effort, trying to, do stuff and find some footage. You know, some people would deal with you.
No, absolutely. When did like I said, you know, what your collection of terms? Well, we'll get into this now because it's funny because I've talked about my fight collection. I'm looking right now at it and kind of got spindles of DVDs sitting over here on the shelf and. I don't know. I probably have 500 DVDs, maybe, give or take. We'll get into this now, because I know you don't know the exact number, but it just kind of cracks me up, and it'll blow people's minds. As far as your collection goes over the years and stuff, I don't know, just throw a ballpark. How many fight DVDs or do you have?
It's somewhere between 16,000 to 17,000 hockey fight DVDs. It's so the, you know, I don't have, I'm believe it or not, I have a life. People might not believe that, but I do have a life. I don't have the time to go down there and count them all out. It's just, that's not going to happen. I'll have an accurate count someday when they've all been converted to a digital file, then I can count up the numbers in the folders. But I counted a box one time. It had over 200 in there. And then I just multiplied the boxes and the space of how of, and extrapolated the numbers, came up with an estimate. And then one of the old time collectors, I got his collection. He said he had about 3,000. So I added 3,000. So yeah, I estimate that I have somewhere currently between 16,000 to 17,000 hockey fight tapes and DVDs. Some people are like, how do you get that many? First of all, they're not all separate, exclusive. There's a lot of dupes in there. So what ended up happening is, I got started early on buying stuff from the guys who used to advertise out of the hockey news for many years or other sources. I was a collector. I just wanted to see it all. So I started developing a library as far as that's concerned. Then the numbers started to grow with the trade. So once we hit the FC era, and we're doing trades now. I'm really like growing my numbers as far as bringing in footage, trading stuff, and also a lot of it too. We go back to what we spoke about earlier, Darren. Just having good relationships with people. Have good relationships with people. You get a good rep that you're a decent person to deal with. It opens doors for you. And so I started growing my collection there. Then the DVD era hit. And I went out and I invested in I spent like $700 or $800 on, they finally came down. I remember when the DVD recorders came out, I first started pricing them and they first came out like $3,000. I'm like, yeah, I'm not spending $3,000, but finally it dropped down to about $700-$800. I bought my first Panasonic, the Panasonic units were great. I loved them. My first Panasonic DVD recorder. And, I, of course, converted my collection, all my old tapes, late 90s, I converted all those over to DVD. Then I offered as a service out to people to convert theirs. And I still offer this service today where if anybody is sitting on, their collection, it's got to be a good collection. I'm not going to do it for, a multi-generational collection. But if somebody has a good collection and they want it preserved, I still have all my machines. They're just sitting around collecting dust right now, and I do it for free. That way you can back up your data. These tapes, these VHS tapes, the science is out there that they degrade over time. Some of these tapes, when the guy started recording back in the late 70s, some of these tapes are like over 40 years old now. And 40, and some of these tapes are in there. Some of the tapes I got in my collection are over 30 years old. So, and I've seen in my own collection, I pull out an old tape. I've seen in my collection a good what used to be a good tape. I see it the video quality's gone down. It's starting to degrade. So that's why I'm glad I preserved everything that I did. So I offered that out on FC that if anybody wants their collections preserved, send it to me. And all anybody has to do is pay to send it to me. I'll record it no cost. I'll save it for people, and I'll get it back to them. And so I started, a lot of people took me up on my offer. So I started, I make myself my own copy and of what it was. So I started really expanding my collection then. And a lot of the old guys from the hockey news, I got a few of those collections were duplicated. Or in some cases, I end up getting collections. Now, we go up further. We get to the NHL strike and we get to where the hobby starts to die. And the hobby started to die with YouTube, and we can get into that more expansive detail. But the hobby started to die with streaming hockey fights with YouTube and the new NHL. A lot of the old collectors started to lose interest. You put in all this time and expense. Well, it's all up there on YouTube. Like, why should I spend my time? And it's a lot of hard work because there's a couple seasons I did it. I tried to do it. And it is a lot of work to keep up with it, record the games. Then when you get some time to take the fights off the games and put them on your master tape, and a lot of guys lost interest in hockey because hockey changed. It actually started with the obstruction crackdowns in the late 90s, early 2000s, And the game started to change. You know, streaming media started to change the hobby as far as trades were concerned. It ended, both those factors ended up killing tape trading for most people. I'm still into it, but from, you know, I'm one of the few last holdouts. And for tape trading and for the hobby itself, the old fight boards died out. And you know, the only remnants of them are on the, you know, like the Facebook and stuff. I don't know what other social media has it, but it's not like it used to be. And those Facebook pages don't hold a candle to the old fight boards. Steve's trying to build something though. Steve's trying to build with his thing, and so it, you know, and there will be a message board section. So maybe we can get a little bit of that back with some old fashioned hockey fight fans, some old fashioned discussions and stuff. So hopefully I know Steve's close. Hopefully that'll be up and running soon in full force, you know?
Yeah, the Fight Chronicles. Yes, that site is coming, folks. I know I was just talking to my show. I know people always talk about Drop Your Gloves, and they're always mad that Drop Your Gloves went away and everything like that. Well, it's Steve's goal to bring it back and it kind of bring back an old school, like, message board, fight clip, like, basically Drop Your Gloves 2.0 is what he wants to do. And, well, that's what he did do. It is coming out. I've seen the site. I've seen the shell of it. I know what they're trying to do. And I'm actually really looking forward to it for the fact that I hope it can bring back some of the older guys and get their, kind of get a nostalgic thing. Now, I don't think, we're all going to be trading DVDs again and it'll all be great, but I don't think that'll happen. But I hope it kind of rekindles some stuff in people and, like, some of the older guys that are a little maybe jaded with the, well, there are no fight sites anymore. They got the sour taste in their mouth from hockeyfights.com and whatever. Hopefully they come back and we'll populate the community on Steve's site and we can kind of maybe recapture some of the old. It'll never go back to what it was, but I mean, hopefully it can capture some of the some people's enthusiasm again, I guess we'll put it that way.
Yeah, and you know, it was on the one hand I benefited, but it is tough because a lot of these guys we knew, and you know, when they write you or they tell you, hey, I'm getting out, I lost interest, and you know, it's like, oh man, another guy, so that guy stops making them, and a lot of these guys, basically, I end up with their collections, and you know, in some cases, and actually another case, another guy that I work with, we worked together. He ended up with a couple collections, and then, we worked together as far as me taking them and converting them from VHS into DVDs. And then in a couple cases, guys sold me their collections. You know, they're like, hey, how much would you give me for this? And I would come up with a fair price, and I'd get their collections. And, you know, and in their case, I had a few people who said, you know what, I know you're still into it, I know you'll take care of it, and they were happy. They were happy that, you know, even though they weren't into it, it was going to somebody who's still into the hobby, I'm still going to use it. What I do, I take this material, and we could get into my archive that I'm building, and how I plan on creating, you know, when I retire here, how I plan on creating my own projects and stuff here in the future. So, if anybody's looking to get rid of the collection, they can contact me. I'll be happy to look into it and see what you got. And, it'll go to a good home and, it'll go into an archive that's being preserved.
Well, let's talk into, like you said, when the day you retired, you're going to go down and crack open these 17,000 DVDs, the projects that you have going. I know, there's some stuff that I would like to do as well with some of my footage. And I know, Yuka out there, I know he's doing a Mike Bro thing right now and he's trying to collect all that. I think can you believe he's got like 600 fights from Mike Bro? Like he's like a separate and he still hasn't got them all. That's crazy how many fights that guy got into. But anyway.
Oh he's one of my favorite guys to watch too. And
tremendous.
I would get he shows up in the when I first noticed him, those Quebec semi-pro hockey league things, and then it became the LNH stuff. But if you watch that old stuff with the Quebec semi-pro stuff, I mean, he was great. And you know, I think he fought. I got his boxing matches. I actually got his boxing match, maybe a couple of them against him and Brashear. Him and Brashear have a couple boxing matches up in Quebec. And no, he's one of my favorite guys. I enjoyed watching it.
He definitely
stood out in those early Quebec semi-pro days. And then near the end, I don't know how old he was, but when you get to 04-05, and there are some like big dudes, you know, some heavyweights in the LNH at that point, and you know, there's some heavy hitters, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, though, crazy time, crazy league. And yeah, so I know that was one of Yuka's projects that he's working on right now. So, and, you know, so he's always looking for footage from the old Quebec days. But yeah, I mean, we all have our little projects that we kind of want to do and get at. What are you, like you mentioned that you know, once you retire, you want to kind of get into this project. What are you kind of looking at in terms of, like, is it a player project or a league thing, or what are you looking to do?
So one of the things I'm doing right now as far as archiving when I get the time is a lot of the early stuff, the early 70s stuff, the early 80s stuff, the 60s stuff. Right now what I do is I'm taking the files. Well, first of all, I have to organize it because as we spoke of the other night, there could be seven or eight copies of a tape floating around within the collection because I've gotten these from so many sources over the years, and I use the example of there's a fight, you know, there's a tape that starts out with Luke Dufour, Barry Beck. It starts out in the 82-83 season, but it covers mostly the 83-84 season. And I have several copies of this tape. And, you know, so I look for the best quality as far as that's concerned. And, you know, it's trying to track down, okay, you know, I got a little spreadsheet. Okay, I you know, it's in this collection, it's in this collection, it's this collection. Who's got the best quality of that tape? So I'll take the best quality of the tape, and then I split it. I split it by the fight. So I'll, you know, depending on how many fights they are, I'll use a video splitter. I split up the tape, and then I label it, and then I put it in the respective year. If it's 82, 83, put it in there, or 83, 84, put it in there. And then on each of the tapes, I watch the end of the tape because some tapes, they might cut off at a certain point. Like some tape might cut off at Contos and Baxter. Some might have a couple fights after that. So even though I have I'm splicing up the best quality of the tape, it might stop at Contos and Baxter, but there might be a tape with a couple more fights on there. So I just want to make sure I don't miss out on anything there. Or in some cases, some guys would add on. And I've had a few guys do this for me back in the day. You know, there's a one or two fights on another tape, and you're like, hey, can you, any chance you can add that one on? And some cases, guys would be nice and they'd add a couple fights at the end of the tape. So you never know if someone in their collection has a couple of these added fights at the end of the tape. So I'm always looking for that. And what I'm doing right now is I'm archiving by the season. And when I retire here, I want to start building one of the most comprehensive NHL thing. Go season by season. And, you know, what I like to do is put every feed of a fight. So, you know, we were talking 80-89, there's the Islanders against Philadelphia. And the one fight I remember from that game, and I think there was multiple fights. It might have been when Chanel fought Tockett. But I know Mick Vokoda and Jeff Chychrun fought. And in that particular game, I know there are at least four feeds. There's the Islander feed, there's the Philly feed, there's an ESPN feed, and there's a Canadian feed. I don't, off the top of my head, remember if it's the English feed or if it's the French feed, but there's four different feeds, which is kind of rare for that. So I will when I eventually get to it, I'll throw all four feeds as I'm going forward. So you get to see it in all four feeds. And then if there's any news clips, I'll throw the news clips on the end. And then if there's an interview, like if somehow, you know, the fighter happened to talk about that fight, oh, yeah, I fought Chychrun, and, you know, it was Mick talking about fighting Chychrun, well, I might throw a little piece of that at the end. Or, you know, like the, you know, God, someday when I get to the Domi Probert fight, there's a ton of not just the fight itself, there's a ton of coverage of that particular fight. I just like to be complete and thorough as I put these things together. So I want to do one for the NHL. I want to do one for the AHL. You know, I used to do this thing years ago. It was called the Tough Guy Chronicles. And I was just fascinated by all the enforcers and their matchups with each other. So I might try to do that again, where just all the noteworthy enforcers and their matchups against each other, whether it be juniors, and put it in chronological order by the date, the season, and, you know, whether it be juniors, AHL, NHL, IHL, and just move through there. I might resurrect that one here in a few years.
tremendous. Well, one thing I wanted to add just off the top of my head while we're sitting here, in terms of your collection and, like you said, being around the Bruins or whatever, have you ever made any tapes for players?
I made one for O'Reilly. I was put in. I'm not friends with O'Reilly. I'm not going to pretend I'm friends with him or you know, we talk or anything like that. I was put in contact from someone who knew Terry, and I just, you know, I was, you know, I just said, yeah, I make hockey fight tapes. Do you think you'd be interested? And I did speak to Terry. I said, you know, hey, I could throw something together for you. So I have made them for players, and I have had players. There was one thing. So one old collector who sent me, the guy who from Montreal, Robert, who sent me his collection, and he said he asked if he sent somebody my way, if I could take care of him. And there was an old player from the LNH who was looking for his footage, and Robert had made a couple. I didn't realize at the time. So I ended up for this guy, this player, I ended up making a set for him. And then, so I made him a set because I'm like, yeah, I don't see anything in here. I don't see your thing, your player DVD in here. So I made him a set, which kills me because about a year later, I discovered that he did indeed make a set for him. So I recontacted the player, looking at my old emails, and then sent him a copy of that. But I end up making one for him. I've made a project for a couple players. I don't have the time now. But if a player reached out to me, though, if something's already made of them and it's in the collection, yeah, I'd take care of a player, but I got to verify it's a real player. If I'm just contacted by email, there was a time I was contacted by somebody who portrayed they were a player, and I just assumed they were, and I made up a project for them of what they had and sent it to them. And I didn't expect anything back from them, but then the guy offered to send me like a jersey, and I was like, all right, cool, I'll take it. Never got the jersey. I sent the thing, you know, not that I'm really into the jersey thing, but once you throw the offer there, you're like, okay, all right, sounds cool. You then you kind of get your hopes up for it, but it never came. What are you going to do?
Yeah. It's funny because as I've done this show, of course, I'm interviewing players or whatever. Of course, I always ask them, hey, do you have any footage? Like 98% of them don't.
Yeah.
Have you, I'm assuming you do the same. I mean, if you've ever run it, like, I'm sure when you talked to O'Reilly, did you say, hey, Terry, do you have any of your stuff on tape? Did you ask him that?
Yeah, no, I did. And then I also offer, too, I ask, hey, you know, if you ever hear of anybody who might, can you keep me in mind? You know, like, I'd really, you know, I really like to see, you know, if you have the footage. There was I want to protect people's privacy. Through a family relative who worked with a minor league enforcer in the Boston, you know, guys from the Boston area, and, you know, put me in contact with the guy. So I called the guy I'm talking to him. I let him know what I do for, you know, hobby and stuff. And I made the offer of, you know, hey, I can make you something. Do you have any footage? And he said he did. He had some footage. He noted he had some old brawl. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I'd really, you know, and I was willing to drive to where this guy lived or worked, and I'd say, hey, I can drive and pick it up, duplicate for you. And, you know, that never ended up coming to fruition. And then I heard from another collector that he was going to make something up for the guy. So I was like, all right, whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's always, you never know, right? You got to, like I said, it goes back to like shaking the bushes and hopefully something falls out, and you never know if you don't ask. Right. So it,
yep.
You know, it, well, and, yeah, I mean, I've made stuff for some players too, and you know, it. You know, every once in a while, it's panned out though that you end up finding some good stuff from guys. But I've always heard actually, like Don Cherry has like a really big fight tape collection.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he does or not. That would be interesting if he does, and you know. But I don't know if that's the case. I have no firsthand knowledge if it is, you know?
Yeah, I just know I've heard him reference like, oh, I have fight. Like he's mentioned, oh, I have these fights on tape and I'll sit up at the cabin and play some and whatever. And I've always wanted to know, like, what exactly does he have, right? Like, because I mean.
Well, it could be a couple things, Darren, too. Now, he could have stuff that people send him. So,
yeah.
So, you know, Don's a lot of people in the hockey fight community are fans of Don, obviously, because Don's a celebrity, pro fighting, great, you know, he used to do those great, his show where he had it at the bar, those great interviews that he used to do with the tough guys. Yep. So he's got a lot of fans within the hockey fight community. And, I could see a case where someone might say, hey, I'll send you a couple tapes. So people might send them tapes, or maybe other collectors. He was in contact with other collectors. They took care of him. And, or maybe he has stuff. I have no idea whether he has any. I have no firsthand knowledge whether he has anything or not, or whether he just has a lot of stuff that we all have.
Yeah, no, that would always be interesting. I always wanted to know that. But what's the go ahead.
Well, I do know of a case of I never dealt with the player. I do know of a case of a player who also became a coach who was taping the games and working with another tape collector. He would give the tape collector, so he was saving footage at the AHL level, and he would send the tape collector the games and again, this isn't unique, but that's the one player I was thinking about that was saving stuff and giving it to a tape collector to make.
Yep. Yeah, unfortunately, I wish there was more guys that did that. I only know of a few, but as far as your footage goes, what's the oldest footage you have?
Well, the oldest is I think it's the stuff we like that old clip of the 1935. Actually, I think there's one even before that. But the one that I don't remember the name, but I think that might have been also a Montreal New York Ranger fight. But there's that one. It's the clip of the 1935 Ranger Montreal brawl, and then there's one also from 1953. That might be the date of the oldest as far as that's concerned. And then we have a bunch of stuff out of the 50s and 60s that's been put out there, but that's widely available. The rare thing that I just came up, I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, of course I do. That's where I was leading to. Here, let's hear it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
All right. Very good. Very good. So, yeah, I have this footage of the John Winsink, Len Cunning AHL incident. And I got to re-record that off of Super 8. I recorded off of 8mm so that the horizontal line was a little bit off. So I got to redo that on Super 8. Unfortunately, home projects and this conversation took precedent over that this weekend. But so the Len Cunning John Winsink incident, which is a famous incident, and it's famous because it's reported brutality. It was really supposedly one of the more brutal incidents that happened in the history of hockey fighting.
And Don Cherry actually talks about that in his first book, how vicious it was. Yes.
Oh, so I promised my source I would never tell anybody who I got it from. And again, I got to honor my word as far as that. So there is an interesting story about how this footage was survived and somehow got into my hands eventually. So I end up, transferred over to digital, and so I finally got to see it to confirm it. And it starts out so there's a bunch of scoring plays in the footage, highlights of rushes up and down the ice, and then it gets to to where this incident picks up, and there's already a fight going on. I don't know who the players were. There's two other players already fighting. So in the lower right hand of the screen, Winsink matches up with Cunning, and it's like Winsink throws a quick right. I don't know if it'd be a sucker punch or if Cunning should have known it was coming, but I don't think he saw the punch coming. You know what they say? It's the punches you don't see coming from those angles that knock people out. So he goes right down, and then the camera angle moves. So now you get to see them also fully in the screen. They were kind of cut off a little bit in the lower right angle when they first went up. So you're just seeing their upper bodies. They go down. Cunning is clearly out. Cunning is on his back. motionless, looking up at the at the sky. I wouldn't even say looking up. He's just out. Wincink gets on top of him, similar to how he got on to Alex Pyrus and the old Montreal Boston thing. So he's on his stomach, and then he proceeds to and I just want to say this though. You're talking to a guy who collects hockey fights for a hobby. Grew up watching boxing. I'm not squeamish, but I take no enjoyment and I'm going to be honest with you. It was pretty brutal. I take no enjoyment in watching this. I'm preserving it because it has historical value within the hobby. It's not something that I'm going to replay and enjoy watching it because it was brutal. And, I'm just going to explain it to people though. So they know what took place. So Winston gets on his stomach and he's sitting on top of him. Cunning's clearly out. And then he proceeds to measure him and wail away with 8 shots. And I was trying to think, of a comparable in the history of hockey fighting that we've seen. And, there was the Ben Wilson Hillworth fight where Ben Wilson catches Hillworth, but that was an even up fight. And I think in that case, Hillworth goes down. Wilson keeps slugging away, and you see Hillworth's head, and that was kind of a brutal knockout. But I think that was those extra shots was Wilson in the heat of the moment, still going on, and maybe he didn't realize Hillworth was out as he was. Wincink with Alex Pyrus. Pyrus, even though on his back, could still take defensive measures, try to control him. And you see in the UFC fights how, and that's what I'm not a big fan of the UFC, but I've seen some things where guys are on their back and somehow they turn they get a hold of a guy's arm and they turn it around and end up like getting the guy in a submission hold, which is crazy. But just because a guy's on his back doesn't mean he's necessarily out of the fight. So when Wincink was trying to fight Pyrus, he's trying to take shots when he was on top of Pyrus. Pyrus was still conscious and still trying to tie Wincink up and take defensive measures. Then you had the 91 playoffs, Dave Brown and Jim Kite. And when Kite was with Calgary, Dave Brown was with Edmonton. They get kind of mixed up together. I think it was Roberts and originally Steve Smith. And, Kite and Dave Brown get tied up. And they start going at it. And Brown knocks Jim Kite down. Now, for whatever reason, Jim Kite's on his back. And for whatever reason, Jim decides to throw a fight up at Dave Brown, and which pisses Dave off. And Dave starts to measure Jim. And just starts to fire away. That might be the closest comparable to this. But even in that case, Jim Kite was still conscious and still could take defensive measures. But Dave Brown fired on him, wasted away on him, and Dave's Jim Kite and the other players came in, and then he held up. And clearly Kite was Dave's, but he did hold up, knowing that he had Kite at a disadvantage. This with Wincink, he didn't hold up. He kept going, and it is a scary moment. So the two refs are over trying to manage the other fight. The two linesmen are trying to manage the other fight. The linesman is over there, and he sees this, and he sees Wincink on top of Len Cunning, bashing away at him. And just so people know, I was I'm a fan of John Wincink. I grew up in Boston. I loved him when he was a Bruin. So I'm not, I have no bias against the guy. I'm just giving an honest assessment of what I saw. The ref comes over and jumps on and tries to wrestle Wincink so he can't do any more damage. Wincink's still trying to fight past the ref. So he's fired up. I don't know if he was just in a total fit of rage or something like that. But he's still trying to fight past the ref. To do more damage on Cunning. Cunning, at some point, when the ref comes over, you can see his right hand faintly move and try to grab at Wincink's pant leg, and then it stops. But he's out, and he's in bad shape. The video, there's like a split-second time jump, and there is another player trying to get in and try to get at Wincink, but he's being held off by a Rochester player. And then the two other linesmen who have the other fight broken up, they come over, and they helped the ref try to get Wincink off of Cunning. The ref probably saved Cunning's life, and it's good for all. It's good for John as far as Cunning and stuff, that it didn't turn tragic. That's how brutal it was. You know, so and that's no exaggeration on my part. I don't think I've seen anything that brutal where a guy who was clearly out got hammered that way, you know?
Yeah, well, like, has Winsick, like, has there ever been a mention, like, why Winsick got so friggin' mad about it? Or, like, has there ever been anyone ever talk about it? Like, other than, oh, I heard. I mean, has Winsick ever said anything about it? Or has Cunning ever said anything about it?
I didn't say, so I posted that newspaper article, and, you know, it really didn't get into it. I did reach out to Don Cherry on Twitter, and he got back to me through a direct message, and he can't really recall, but he said something might have happened earlier in the game. So, you know, who knows? Who knows why he went after him, if it was that game or something he did in a previous game, you know, but he was clearly seeing rage at that point to go that far, you know?
Yeah. Well, like you said,
the funny thing is you remember when Winsink years later, he knocked out Larry Place there and with a body check, and he immediately like signaled to the bench. So, you know, it, you know, like, hey, he's out, you know, and he was signaling to the bench like, hey, get somebody over here to help this guy. So, just a bad night, you know?
Yeah. Wires crossed and there we go. But, well, just I know, and like we kind of talked off air as far as the collectors go and stuff like that. You know, everyone has their holy grail footage that they would love to see. You know, I've always said I would have loved to have seen more Probert Jr. footage, OHL footage, because there really isn't anything, which is surprising actually. But like, there's like five fights or something. It's like lame. But I off the top of my head, that's what I would love to see. That I know we had talked briefly about, you know, a lot of the old timers I can remember hearing, they always wanted to see the Plimpton game. And for those wondering what I'm talking about, it's the Bruins Flyers game with George Plimpton, the writer, actually plays. He plays a net for, did he play a period or something in goal in a preseason game? Something like that.
Yeah. That was something Plimpton used to do back then. So he did that with the Lions. He practiced with the Lions. Like Plimpton would get with a team and, you know, they actually let him in a preseason game apparently. And I think he might have, I don't know what he did with the Lions, if he played just a couple plays or something like that, and they didn't write about it in Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, yeah. So,
in that case, he wrote a whole book. It was open net.
Yep.
So
well, and in the in this game where he plays net for the Bruins, there's a massive brawl that breaks out between the Flyers and Boston, and that footage has never been surfaced.
Yeah, never been serviced and never been verified. I don't know if it exists, to be honest with you. I haven't heard anything. And, you know, there were rumors. I think someone said there were rumors of, like, Al Secord watching it in the locker room and stuff like that. But those are unsubstantiated rumors. But that would be a great find. A couple things on my holy grail. I would love to see the preseason 92 fight between Probert and Poshek when Poshek was with Toronto. Supposedly Poshek did well on that and supposedly caught Probert with a shot. And I think that just raises it. You know, when you hear about that, it just raises everybody's curiosity. And Poshek was a good fighter.
Yep.
So that raises everybody's curiosity as far as how that one went. I wouldn't mind getting a live feed of the Detroit Toronto brawl from 85-86, the one where Probert headbutts McGill. And, you know, that there's plenty of news footage of it, so you can kind of piece together what took place. You know, there's news footage from different outlets of several different angles, so you kind of see a lot of that stuff. But I'd like to see the live, uninterrupted team feed or something like that. You know, even though they're not telecast, there could be a team feed. So, you know, there's stuff in collections out there where, you know, minor league stuff and there's some of the pros, like some of the old Blackhawks stuff, even though it wasn't telecast, somebody was able to get a hold of the team feed of that. And that happens in minor league games too, where there might be a team feed of something like that exists, not all the time, but, you know, someone was recording there at the time and you know, for all that footage to go out over the news outlets. So it'd be nice to get an uninterrupted feed of that, either from the news people, you know, and you could have the news people. So you remember the and one that we're lucky to have is the Flyers in Montreal pregame playoff brawl back during the 80, playoffs during the 86-87 series. And, you know, the fact that a couple people were filming at the time, like, you know, so we got to catch that brawl pretty much from almost the beginning when it picks up and see it through the duration. And I think that was picked up because guys had satellite dishes. And, you know, for whatever reason, the cameras were rolling. And, you know, there's one feed where you see Pat Clement in there. That must have been the ESPN thing. And he's just standing by watching it. So that was a nice one to see. And I think everybody always says they'd love to see more Bob Gassoff footage. And, you know, Gassoff against Holmgren, that fight. I think there's photos of that fight. And a couple of things that have surfaced on YouTube that were rare that we always – so that Schultz and Holmgren fight, when Schultz comes back as an L.A. King, that one surfaced on YouTube. That was great. The Joe Koscher, Dave Semenko, I don't know if you want to call it a fight. I think Dave kind of got the jump on Koscher in that one. He kind of just went down. But still a nice thing to see. Someone within the past couple of years released a Randy Holt against Dave Semenko fight, which was a good one. And then recently someone just put out a clip of the beginning of the Schultz-John Van Boxmeer fight where Schultz catches him with a shot and put it down. Like we had footage of the aftermath with Van Boxmeer already down, but no one had the actual shot being landed, and that just appeared. So there's always hope that there's stuff out there, and you know, maybe it can surface someday.
No, absolutely, and like you said, and every once in a while something will pop up, and Well, speaking of Poshek, that was one that came out because everybody had heard throughout the Western Hockey League the famous Jim Lattos-Rudy Poshek fights that took place in the Western League while those got released. And those were those are like two of the best fights I've ever seen in my life, those two. And, so that was cool. So you never know what's out there and who has what and what'll appear. But, you know, we can always hold out hope, right, that somebody will talk to the right person and they'll come through. And like I said, I was talking to you last night. Hopefully I have some irons in the fire here. I'm always kind of looking for old Blades footage. And I got a guy hot on the heels here. He's trying to find the VHS tape at his mom's house somewhere. So of the old news that he used to record. So hopefully that'll appear. That'll be interesting, but you never know, right? But like I said, you gotta ask and shake the bushes and see. And I know I've kept you here for a long time, and we've talked about the old trading and the footage and everything else. And I mean, for an old fight nerd like me, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. But before we'll get away from the footage and stuff, and I'm gonna hit you with this. You didn't know I was gonna ask you this, but we're gonna play a little lightning round here. You know, people are always, because in the latest episode that I released, well, it's Sunday that I'm putting this out, you know, they're talking about, people are always talking about their top tens, or this guy and that guy and whatever. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Who are your top five of all time?
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, I know what we're going to do. I know what it'll do, because I just released this episode. The Mount Rushmore.
Nope.
There you go. What is Ron's Mount Rushmore of hockey forces?
So before I give you my Mount Rushmore, here was my theory when we used to argue over these with the message boards, and we both boards tried to do like the ultimate top 10. Yeah. We actually tried to do a top 10 on FC, and we tried to establish criteria. And as I said, this is all sports fantasy stuff, but we, you know, it ended up going awry. And, what happens is, and I, you know, you and me see this on Facebook a lot. So what happens is there are, you know, if you take a top 15, top 20, 25, and you can argue these guys belong. And the fact of the matter is there's only so many spots, but there may be a number of worthy fighters. So, you know, if you're doing a top 10, well, there could be 20 players that you could argue are worthy of the top, like legitimate argument top 10 because that's what happened. People get their feelings hurt, like, oh, you're not going to put this guy in, you know, because they're, first of all, they're fans of the guy and they think highly of him. Oh, you're not going to put this guy. It's like, you know, you're going to put this guy over that guy. It's like, well, listen, it's nothing against that guy. He is worthy. But
how do you cross over eras and all that stuff, right? Like,
there's only 10 spots, but there's like 20 to 25 guys you could throw in. You could make an argument deserve to be in the top 10. So do you want my top five, my Mount Rushmore favorite or the best of all time? And I got one disclosure is that the fighters after the new NHL came out, I'm really not well versed on. I stopped watching hockey. I tried to. I couldn't watch the new NHL. It's not the hockey I grew up with. I always make this comment that, you know what, it's like trying to drink non-alcoholic beer. There's something that's just, you know, it's just missing that makes the product so much enjoyable. And the physicality, it's not just the fights, but it's the way the game is played. I just didn't, I don't enjoy the new NHL. I lost interest of it. So consequently, I still collected footage past it, but consequently, I'm not well versed in, you know, guys past the new NHL. I know, you know, Derek Bogard, obviously he was great. But even guys, you know, like Ryan Reeves, one of my friends asked me about Ryan Reeves, and I've seen Ryan Reeves fight, technically really good, but this friend of mine asked me, how do you think you'd do against Probert? And I'm like, I really couldn't tell you. Ask me about the older players, absolutely, I could give you an opinion, but some of the new guys, I just don't watch enough of their material. I just watch it casually, occasionally, you know? So do you want favorite or best?
No, Mount Rushmore. No, we got to go with the best. Somebody says, Ron, you got to chisel out four faces. Who are the four best?
All right, two of them are super easy. Probert, Dave Brown, yep. just super easy. Ben Wilson, and yep. I'm gonna go with Brash, Brashear. Yep. And you know, when he started out his career. If you wanted to, the two, it's funny, Darren, and this is the funny thing about the old board days. It's the two most polarizing guys. There is a style bias.
Yep.
So it used to be funny because guys who had a wide open style and they were dubbed warriors. And, you know, rightfully so, I'm not downgrading these guys, but there are guys who were warriors who people thought the world of. But their one loss record would be, you know, like, yeah, he's a warrior, but he got crushed in that fight, or he got, you know, he loses more of his fights. Yeah. You know, but they would have the respect of the fight, the old hockey fight community. People didn't like Brashear. It was a style. Because he initially with Montreal, he got in that in tight kind of boring style of fights. And then he started to take off when he got to Vancouver and started to improve. And one of the things is, he said in I think it was in the Fisher's book, he started to get his confidence when he was with Vancouver. But he's a hard guy, and I'm comparing him against his peers. He's a hard guy to fight because he can get inside, he's strong, and he can score. And he used to eat up McSorley near Marty's latter part of his career because Marty would like, try to pry him because Marty would like to try to extend and fight him at arm's length. And as he's trying to do that, then, you know, as he tries to push away, Brashear just starts eating him up with lefts. And, and you also got to give it to Brashear for the longevity. I mean, he went all the way up at a high level up into the new NHL era, and he was still formidable. And I know he got TKO'd or TKO KO, whichever way you want to see it, 92-93 by Chris Simon, the IHL. And how long did he go? And then I think Wade Belak popped him later on when he was with Washington. But how many years did he go before someone actually took him out and got him with a new TKO? I mean, He won his share of fights. He at one point he got dominating, and there was a history there where he was arguably in the top three for many years there. So I'm going to have to give him number four to Brashear.
There you go. Well, I completely agree. Yeah, I've talked about the top 10 and stuff, and I've said personally in my top 10 I have Laroque and Brashear. in my top 10.
Yep.
Holy, well, the heat you get over that, and guy, like you said, guys would argue, and to this day, even on the Facebook, now they'll argue and like, oh, you'll have guys that'll flat out, oh, Brashear and LaRock sucked. It's like, dude, yeah, like, what are we doing here? It sucked. I mean, you might not like their style, but they didn't suck. Yeah. Like, don't say that. You sound like an idiot. You know, like, and like you said, they were really polarizing figures, and it's very much style-wise, right? They didn't like it, because the whole Brashear threw noogies. Well, I've interviewed a lot of players in this show, and guys that have fought Brashear, they'll argue the noogie thing. No, he threw hard, and, you know, like you said, it was just a different style, and you know, was he Joey Koser? Well, no, he wasn't with his power, but I mean, if he stretched you out and got going, and like you said, once he got his confidence and really came into his own, him and LaRock went seasons without losing. Like,
a long stretch of being at the top. And his style wasn't, for many years, it wasn't fun. I guess it'd be frustrating for the other guys who are fans of the Air Enforces. They go in and fight Brashear, and you know, some of these guys who get a little too much emotionally invested. The guys who are wired a little too tight. Guys who are a little too emotionally invested in this, and their guy gets taken out by Brashear, and it's like, oh, he didn't fight fair. He didn't open up. Well, isn't that kind of smart? Like, he fought his style, and it was able to pick him apart from inside. And you know, I think he dropped Poshek one time. There's a bunch of guys he dropped. I think in watching these guys, it's very tough to land a power shot or a TKO or a shot from inside. And he developed into the type of guy who could.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, the final one I'll ask you here is, we always kind of say everybody sort of the number one guy. It's almost like, is it Probert or is it Brown? That's sort of always been, are you a Probert one guy or a Brown one guy?
I'm a Probert one guy, and I am. I mean, you could make the argument otherwise, but I'm still a Probert one guy. I mean, you know, everybody takes their losses. I could point out Brown's losses. I mean, Brown in their, you know, they had two head-to-heads that I'm aware of, and the fight in 87, 88. Yeah, I always wonder if Probert got caught at the end of his shift. Because it was kind of a fight where Probert really didn't unload on him and go full bore at him. You know, it was kind of a slow, trodden fight. And then in 1991 when they fought and they were going toe to toe, and you know, which was a great fight. Probert ended up winning that one. So I kind of give it to Probert. Yeah, you could pick a, and that's another thing, Darren. You can pick apart any fighter. You can sit there. Well, yeah. Probert lost. Probert got KO'd by Todd Ewan. Probert took a shot by Grant Jennings, and I could do the same thing with Dave Brown. Now, it's not to deter from either of them because they're great fighters, but I could say, Brown got TKO'd by Randy McKay, but he did avenge that loss. But Brown took a couple losses there. You know, Jim Kite, or in 85, 86, you know, and he would avenge that one. But Brown had taken some losses too.
No, absolutely. Everyone loses, and I think I brought this up in the episode I just recorded because it was a thing about Probert's losses, but I think it's sort of become this like this almost this trendy like this revisionist trendy history to like kind of almost knock Probert down a few pegs. Like you have some people that go completely overboard and he walked on water, never lost, and blah blah blah. And I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
And then you have the other group. The other group that is like, oh, well, no, he only won because his jersey came off or he was on coke or he was, you know, you have these guys that'll just like shit all over him just to shit all over him. And it's like, you know, you got to be somewhere in the middle here. He did lose and there are losses, but it's like when you go over his history and you look back on it, man, the dude had 300 fights and it's like, and he did not lose that all that much.
No, and you got to look at the era too. Don't forget. Well, he's kind of like he spans two generations because I always look at 93-94, the incoming of the next generation of those enforcers, like when McCarthy came in and Simon and you know there's a new generation of guys breaking in 93-94. But previous to that, you know, Probert breaks in 85, 86, and you got to look at the quality of competition around there. And even though he didn't fight Kosher till later on, till the 90s, but you had him, you had Kosher. Jay Miller during his Boston run was pretty good. Dave Brown, Berube, you know, just Marty McSorley. There was a ton of really good fighters there. So, you know, you can look at any fighter who fights enough. And, you know, I know, guys, you know, there's not enough video of Nick Fatiu. There's not a lot of video of Clark Gillies, so it's tough. If they fought, my theory is if those guys fought more as great as they were, you'd see more losses. It's you know, water always seats its height or its depth or whatever they call that. But a lot of these guys in the 80s, first of all, we get to see a ton of their fights because there was a bunch of guys recording back then as opposed to the 70s. The 70s, when guys were just starting getting in the hobby, we missed a lot of fights. A lot of fights from these old guys got lost in certain markets. Like, you know, in Boston, New York, guys were recording, but some of these other markets, they weren't recording, so we missed out on some of their fights. And in the 80s, though, a lot of people recording, so now we get to see all their fights. And so there's a bigger selection of material there, and they were fighting a lot that you can see. And yeah, these guys, Brown, Probert, you can go to McSorley. They all, yeah, occasionally they lost the fight, but you know, you can't, like, and guys will focus on that the few losses as opposed to looking at all, you know, some of their noteworthy wins. You know,
yeah, I mean, you got to look at the overall body of work, right? You can't. They seem to all of a sudden just fixate on a few of them, and it's just like, wow. Yeah. You know, he had 200 some other fights too, man. Like, come on, you know. So, I mean, that was always. I had a couple guys on that are really big Semenko fans, and like Luciano and those guys, and they were like, and William, and like really in depth, and they've done a lot of study and a lot of research of Semenko, brought up old articles, yep. Found some older fights, blah blah blah, and like Luciano brought it up on the thing, like the thing that people see, they never saw the. A prime Semenko. They never saw the best of Semenko because his WHA stuff isn't out there. His early Oiler NHL stuff isn't out there. Not really. So there's a lot of, so all of a sudden when you see a lot of the Semenko footage that's out there is that mid 80s Oiler run to the Toronto and Hartford. And that's, you know, and he was at the end then and whatever. But so people see overhyped. Yeah.
Yeah, you miss out on this prime stuff. So when a new enforcer back then breaks in, they, you know, they want to make a name for themselves, so they fight a lot. And then, you know, whether it's earlier, they hit their prime. A lot of that stuff on Semenko was lost. I'd like to see. I think he fought Playfair at least once or twice. There's at least one photo of the fight, but I'd like to see that fight and see how that one turned out. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and so like there's all and like. I've been, well, not real, but I've always sort of been critical of Fatio, right? Like, guys would always, oh, no, he's a top five guy. And I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like, you know, his fights weren't really there. You know, the numbers aren't there. Wow, but you never saw him in the WHA, though. And it's like, well, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
And, like, no one else really did either. And I think a lot of guys that did, well, mind plays tricks on people, right? So, I mean... You know, I don't, and I'm not saying he didn't kick ass, but I'm pretty sure some of the ass kickings that you like to talk about, if we actually ended up getting the footage and seeing it, was probably not that big of a win as you think it was. But
the funny thing about the Fatio thing. So first of all, I have the ultimate. I like Nick Fatio. I have the ultimate respect for the guy.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I have nothing. You know, so. But what would happen is from some of those Ranger fans, they would build up, you know, this we discussed this about somebody else with Dave Manson. Some people would build, if some people build a fighter so high, they get a little pushback about people, you know, so you're like, you know, all right, come on, you know. And so it's not that people don't like Nick Fatio, but, you know, some of the guys are building him up. And what used to get me about some of these Nick Fatio fans were how they thought a lot of guys were afraid of him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, how do you know, you know, like Terry O'Reilly, you know, I think there was a case, or the Probert thing. Let's go to the Probert thing.
Twice.
So Probert, twice. But, you know, Probert has got the track record of fighting just, you know, like Nick Fatio was at the end of his career. Like, you know, if there was ever a time to fight Fatio, that would be the time for Probert. But people instantly think that Probert was somehow afraid of him. Well, there's a couple reasons why guys don't fight. I mean, it's not like us fight fans think that these guys, or I won't say all of us, but some people think that guys should fight all the time. Never pass up a challenge, fight all the time. But that's not reality. These guys are living in a different world. They view themselves as hockey players. And you never know. They could be at the end of a shift, not the time to fight, because they're gassed and they don't want to go up against a guy who can handle himself while they're gassed. So they may want to take him at a future time. He could be under orders from the coach not to fight because it can change momentum of the game. Maybe his team's doing all right, and if he gets in a fight, it could turn momentum against him, and his coach is going to ream his ass out for disobeying orders to get in a fight. Like, you know, go out there. If something happens, you have to, all right, fight, but otherwise try not to get into one. So, you know, sometimes the enforcer kind of holds back, or maybe they're sporting an injury. Some of these guys go into games and they're hurting. Their knuckles could be all beaten up and stuff like that. And yeah, if I got to go, I'll go. But you know, if I can get through a game or two until my hand heals up, I'll hold off on it. So there's a bunch of other reasons why a fighter might not fight a guy. But these guys are like mind readers and think that it comes down to fear that, you know, oh, this guy doesn't want to fight Fatio. In my book, Probert has, gets the benefit of the doubt because of all the guys he's fought over the career. So nothing against Nick Fatio. I think, it is an unusual thing, I got to admit, for Probert to back off, but I don't think it was out of fear. That's just me.
No, I don't know if you have a guy with a track record like that. It was interesting the other day on Facebook, they had the guy with, McSorley always duck twist. I'm like, really? You think Marty didn't want to fight Twist? Oh, I was there. I saw Twist challenge him. Oh, of course you were there. Sure you did. You know, it's like, I said, well, how about maybe Twist didn't want to fight McSorley? Takes two to fight.
Well,
no, that's not real. No, that didn't happen. Okay, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you go and look and you see the guy lived in St. Louis. Okay, well, now I know.
Well, it's funny. So some of these guys, there's some inter things that we might not be aware of. Not that Twist and McSorley were friends, but in his book, Dave Sabanko wrote how him and Fatio were kind of matched up during the Battle of Alberta. Now, as Sabanko put his book, I guess they're friends. And he goes, the whole arena thought me and Nick were going to fight. But and I guess Nick was telling him, stay, you know, don't go. He goes, don't get yourself in trouble. Sheehy's not going to fight you. As Sabanko, because Sabanko wanted to get a hold of Sheehy. So, you know, Dave put in his book that, you know, the whole arena thinks me and Fatio are going to fight, but, you know, they're actually buddies. They know each other. They probably would go if they had to, but they weren't going to go there. There was another thing, and the only reason I know this is because it was written in the Herald during the 86-87 brawl between Quebec and Boston. Jay Miller and Basil McRae get hooked up in the corner there. And it looks like they're wrestling and jostling around, and Miller ends up landing on top of McRae. Well, Miller ended up like getting a game misconduct or something and ended up getting suspended, but it was reported in the Herald. He goes, we didn't do anything. He goes, I skated up to him. I said, hey, we probably got so many, majors or something like that. Why don't we sit this one out? So they wrestled, they went down, and I guess McRae, according to the newspaper article, said something to Miller about, hey, so he could get a better look at the brawl, but they had like some sort of mutual agreement to cancel each other out and make it look like they were doing whatever, and they just stood out. But I guess they didn't think they were going to get the misconduct out of it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always, you know, there's always reasons that we'll never know. And but like you said, the diehard fight fans, some people like to create their version of reality anyway or whatever. Yeah. But you know, but it's always a fun. It was always a fun debate to go around and around. And, I know spent a lot of time on fried chicken back in the day and even now with this podcast and everything else. And it's been fun, getting yourself and guys, you know, other fight fans on here and, you know, learning about where they came from and their favorites were and how you got into the hobby and everything else. And, I really enjoyed this. Can't thank you enough for taking the time out. I know you're a busy dude, and I know we've been talking about doing this show for a while. Hopefully this isn't the last time you come on. I'd like to have you on for some other stuff, but I want to thank you today for coming on the show, Ron. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, Darren. I mean, it's good to be part of episode 291. You know, that was the goal, get on before 291.
Yeah.
And so we've accomplished that. No, I had fun. It was a good time. Happy to be on again. And, it seemed to go pretty good here. No shortage. We could probably go another 3 hours. No shortage of stuff to talk about, you know?
Oh, there's a million things I want to ask you, and away from just the collecting hobby, but just fighting in general. Have an old fight message board debate. I will. I want to definitely get you back on for that. And I've taken up enough of your time. I'm going to let you go. But once again, Ron, thank you very much for coming on and being part of the show.
Well, thank you, Darren. You have a great evening.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while I was on?